Young people these days make a pretty compelling case that too many of them wind up going too far into debt to pay for college. I just had lunch with one of my students who's about to graduate with, get this, an $80,000 lug. There are several reasons for debts that great. One of them is that young people just don't vote in great numbers. In fact, the Harvard Institute of Politics forecasts that only 23% of U.S. voters under age 30 are expected to show up to the polls next month. That's right, just 23%. Dr. Wes Crenshaw says that needs to change. He's back with two new voters who are registered and ready to cast their first ballots this midterm election. And they have a whole lot to say about our politics and the issues facing young people today and why their peers aren't into politics. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist, and he's author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. He co-authors the Double Take Advice column, which you can read today online at kcur.org. And Wes, always good to have you here.
Nice to be here on this Royals kind of day.
Boy, it is a Royals kind of day. We hope to have Katie Gill back with us in just a moment. She's a former co-author of the column and a sophomore at Kenyon College in Ohio. With me here in the studio is Kenneth Palmer. He's a senior at Free State High School over in Lawrence. And Kenneth, nice to have you. Good morning.
Nice to be here.
All right. And Katie, is that you? Do I hear you chirping in here?
I have finally arrived, yes.
Okay, Katie, nice to have you. Welcome back to Up to Date.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, Wes, in your column today, you write this: young people aren't just new voters. They're the voters that count the most, or they should be. On November 4th, we'll be setting the course of their future. Anyone 18 and up who isn't registered has decided to hand over the keys to a bunch of old folks like me who may not be around to see the results of our choices. Young people will be. That's in your column today. You feel pretty strongly about all this, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a real optimist on my longevity there. Aren't
yeah.
I? I do feel strongly about it, and it's interesting because my history is that I remember hanging around in fourth and fifth grade in Wichita, Kansas, and we would talk on the playground about things like the Vietnam War. And I remember I had this
– In fourth and fifth grade?
I'm not kidding.
You're a freak show, Wes.
That's weird, isn't it? Our whole class, the teachers staged – in fourth grade, a mock election, and it was a serious business. I was one of the final candidates. I lost, mm-hmm. but I made it through. We had a convention and the whole nine yards. They were very big on involving us in that process. And I remember very clearly one of my peers, just regular kid on the playground, was arguing with me. He says, well, you know, McGovern wants to just pull all the troops out of Vietnam, and it's just going to collapse, and the government is just going to fall, and then it'll all be wasted. And I'm like, wow, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And so
I think it took me to about 12th grade to begin to have those kinds of conversations, Wes, which means you're like eight grades ahead of me already.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I went and saw Senator Sam Ervin of the Watergate Commission out in the Roundhouse, Henry Levitt Arena in Wichita. Saw him come speak. We were able to take off school that day. And so it isn't – you make it sound like, wow, we were the nerdy ones. This was much more common amongst kids and young people. And that was during a time when young people had just gotten the right to vote at 18, mm-hmm. which I think they all did about once. And the statistics tell us it dropped off really quickly. So that's the history I come out with. And I must be raised in a different era because young people today don't have nearly that connection, or they don't realize they have that connection to the political process.
Well, I hope to get young people to call in here, young people or their parents to call in and tell us, what does it take to get younger folks out to vote on Election Day? What's holding them back? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You just mentioned some stats, Wes. According to Tufts University, in the 2010 midterms, only 49% of those under 30 were even registered to vote, down from 56% in 2002. So we don't even have half the under 30 crowd registered, or what?
Yeah, it goes up about 10 points during the presidential election years, those numbers. But that's still not very good. And it just is surprising to me because, as I sort of jokingly said, for folks you and I's age, we're at least on the downside of our culture involvement in the culture, and young people are on the upside. And so what they have to say really should be critical. And I think, as we'll talk about today, there are a lot of barriers they feel, a lot of obstacles they feel about why that isn't happening.
You know, Wes, you talk to teens and young adults and often invite them here onto the show, as you have again today. What makes them different than that generation from the 60s, you know, that was so eager to vote? And I was wondering if you think fourth graders and fifth graders still talk about issues like Syria and Iraq and ISIL on the playgrounds of America these days, because somehow I sort of doubt it.
I think we have the two on the show today that probably did.
Yeah.
Kenneth and Katie are always so knowledgeable. I will tell you okay, I'll tell you what changed and then what I hear in the buzz, and I'll be interested in what the young people have to say about that. I think it was very exciting in the late 60s with everybody activated and politically interested, or everybody, meaning it was the interesting culturally. People saw politics as something that was on their daily list of things to think about, college students and late teens. And so everybody pushed and very quickly, if you remember, got the right to vote, moved down to 18. And my recollection is that had to do with the idea that if you could go and fight in Vietnam, you ought to have a right to vote on the process. Mm-hmm. Well, once that issue disappeared and a few others that were interesting in those days, ecological issues and so on, then young people sort of went back to doing what they are neurologically programmed to do, no offense, Kenneth and Katie, but that is to be interested in themselves. That is what you do until your mid-20s. And the problem with that is that you're not as connected then to the world and as interested in what's happening in it, and the world goes down a direction you may not want it to go.
Right.
So that's what I think changed.
Okay, let me get our Kenneth and Katie into our conversation here, because you're each in very different school environments. Now, Katie, you're in a private college in Ohio. Kenneth, you're in high school. Katie, let's start with you. What's the culture like in terms of politics and voting at Kenyon College out in Ohio? What are you seeing?
I mean, Kenyon tends to be a very socially and politically conscious place, in that we are constantly having dialogues, what we call dialogues, about issues that are very important to us. Currently, I'd say that's Title IX is number one. There has been a lot of somewhat volatile disagreement about what should be done about, you know, violence against women on college campuses. And people are hyper aware about these issues, but it tends to materialize more in online environments and also community-based discussions rather than talks about who we should be electing or how we can work through the system.
You know, Katie, Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill has sort of sparked that national debate with a very intense focus on that issue. What's being debated? What's being talked about at Kenyon when it comes to this whole question of college sexual assault?
Well, as much as we like to say that we're a very safe campus at Kenyon, we, just like the rest of the colleges in America, are experiencing this issue in very real terms. And lately we've had some incidents where we have a Take Back the Night week where we talk about survivors of sexual assault and support them. And we had some incidents that contained theft and people breaking into the Women's Center on campus. And it seems to be that there's a divide between people who think that people in support of Title IX and the new movement are anti-men, and there's a lot being thrown around about radical feminists, whereas on the other side, people are saying that, you know, any disagreement is misogynistic. And then, of course, we have the middle spectrum where we want to form some sort of a consensus between the different genders and people of all gender identities in order to come to terms with these issues and also fight them as a group and not as several different divided sects.
Wow, I feel like I'm back in 1969,
yeah.
man.
No,
you
kidding.
Go, Katie. Do people see that as a politicized issue? And I mean at the legislative level, at the electorate level, or do they see it more as a on-campus internal politic?
I have seen absolutely nothing about legislative issues with regard to Title IX and sexual assault here. It is entirely based on how can we make this college campus better and society better, usually from the ground up. usually based on communities.
Do you think that's because of a mistrust of any higher authority to respond to that?
I think we honestly feel very disconnected. And so I guess distrust would maybe be a strong but applicable term for that. We just don't really see it as an option to go through the legislature in most cases. And we think I think that a lot of people consider this issue more of a societal issue than anything that can be solved with laws. And so there is definitely a disconnect between how we view our lives and our issues and how the government can maybe influence that.
Well, I want to come back to you in a few minutes, Katie, and talk to you about the cost of higher education and how that sort of plays into your thinking here. Kenneth Palmer, a senior at Free State High School over in Lawrence, what's the culture like in terms of politics and voting at your school? What are you picking up?
Well, to put it simply, I think the overall culture is really that politics and discussion of politics is taboo.
Really?
Yes. I mean, and there's some discussion primarily among very specific circles and certain individuals who are informed. But I do believe that there are many kids who are informed about these issues and have opinions on these issues. I don't think that there's a lot of comfort about talking about them, even though for the most part there's a lot of similarity, there's a lot of agreement. These are just issues that we don't touch, and that goes across the whole spectrum of political issues. Social issues come up on occasion. In government class, I think this is a good example. We have kids who will participate, and we have a few people who kind of consistently participate and offer their opinions and their analysis. But for the most part, when we discuss issues, there's a lot of silence and there's a lot of kind of reluctance to take a strong stand on an issue or even really pose your thoughts on an issue just because it's so intimidating. You don't really want to – you don't – because there's a consequence of if someone knows your exact opinions on a variety of issues, they may actually – their opinion of you may change. And there's the climate is so polarized in America as a whole that there's a certain – you kind of have a personal there's a personal quality of these kind of political disagreements where if someone holds the opposite view of you, you actually may like consider them less of a potential friend or individual with whom you can interact.
That is just fascinating. And it's also – it just – you know, it's buckling my knees hearing you talk about that, Kenneth. So the great divide in America between Republicans and Democrats, that's seeped into your high school here, even to the point where kids who might be Republican – don't want to say it and say it too loudly because that might cost them friendships with folks who see themselves as Democrats.
Yes. I mean, most certainly. I think that's true on both sides of the aisle, just taking a strong stand, obviously more so for the Republican minority, although we have some people who are vocal, and I'm glad for that. We have a young Republicans club that has just started up to try and voice some of those things. I think that's a really great development that people are actually wanting to have a dialogue or having a debate between Republicans and Democrats in a way that's supposed to be actually productive and not targeting anyone or anything. There's no kind of animosity involved, and I think that's really
– Katie, which high school – remind us which high school you attended over in Lawrence?
Free State. So I was with Kenneth.
Can you relate to what Kenneth is saying? Does that sound similar to what your experience was?
Yeah, you know, and I've experienced that more, I guess, with the divide in college because it's completely flip-flopped. So at Free State, I do remember just not wanting to discuss politics or demonstrate my views, whereas here in a liberal arts college, it's unavoidable to be aware and to be opinionated.
So very different environments that you've experienced already in your young lifetime here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it has to do a lot with how we're a lot more homogenous, I would say, at Kenyon. We, like most people, tend to be more liberal. And so there's not a huge Republican base. So there's not as much disagreement as I think there would have been at Free State. And that might not necessarily be a good thing.
Yeah.
I might add one little thing to that because I know a lot of the kids in the high schools, and I don't know that I see it dividing up along partisan lines. It divides up along a fear of discussing issues. Back – I left to go
a
down –
a fear of discussing issues because what? They don't know enough about them?
No. I think that is a good question. I think they know a lot. I am actually pretty surprised, at least on social issues, how much young people know and are conversant.
Oh, I get that.
Trying to figure out Syria and ISIS and all of that stuff boggles all of our minds, and that's a hard one. But a lot of these issues are very personal to them, and we can talk about some of them in a little bit. But I think that back when I was in high school – I love going down memory lane here – I kid you not, folks, one of the debate topics, and by that time I'd moved to little old Western Kansas.
Yeah.
One of the debate topics that you could pick from a list of things to write a position paper on was abortion. I don't think that ever happens anymore. And it didn't matter if you were pro-choice or pro-life. You could present your position. And I didn't hate the person who mm-hmm. was pro-life. I didn't even think about that.
But it's different. Our environment has shifted.
People are a little scared to proffer a controversial opinion in that environment for the reasons that Kenneth described. And so people aren't having what I think is a healthy dialogue sometimes in schools. That fosters political interest.
We're talking this morning on Up to Date about why young people don't vote. Some folks been waiting very patiently to get into our conversation here at 816-235-2888, option 2. Tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Ellie from Blue Springs. Ellie, you're on the program with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Good morning, or almost afternoon.
Yes.
I had civics in school when I was in fifth grade, when he was talking about voting and learning about school. And do we do that in elementary schools now? Because it seems like we need to start early to let the kids voice their opinion in a safe environment so that when they get older, maybe they're more comfortable doing it maybe when they get to high school. And because of all the testing that goes on in math and science and English, and scores have to be up there, are we really teaching civics or government or that type of thing in the elementary school?
You know, Ellie, you might be hitting the nail on the head there. Kenneth Palmer, what was your experience at in Lawrence in elementary school, middle school? Did you get a civics education or not?
I mean, I honestly, to be like very candid, I would say not really at all. I mean,
wow.
there was some discussion of things that were going on, very limited. We talked about the presidential election in 2008. Again, the discussion was limited. You know, these were the candidates. This is who's running. But we didn't really talk about issues very specifically. And it isn't encouraged by any means. Like, you know, they encourage voting as a general rule, but obviously it doesn't apply very directly to us as elementary school kids. And it's really – I don't feel like the conversation is really encouraged a whole lot. And the teachers, I don't think, want to bring it up a whole lot because they don't want to become the target of any kind of controversy as well. And I think that the polarized atmosphere overall really contributes to the fact that like, this, no one wants to touch it, especially authority figures who could be culpable for some kind of issue or controversy.
You're making such great points, Kenneth. I just can't believe it. Katie Gia, what was your experience over in Lawrence?
I think I probably had a bit of a different experience because I spent most of my elementary school years outside of D.C., so I was very aware of politics because they were right next door.
Yeah.
But as for in Lawrence, I do recall debating about, with our very limited knowledge, the 2004 election with some of my classmates on the elementary school playground. But definitely, I think my first exposure to the nitty-gritty of politics was in ninth grade civics. And then much more in 12th grade AP government. But, of course, that's not a required class.
Yeah. We go back to some phone calls. And, Ellie, thank you for your good phone call. David from the West Plaza neighborhood. David, good morning.
Hi. Hey, I go out to Colorado now because my daughter's married out there. And I was talking to her new husband. And they're in their 30s, early 30s. And I was like, you know, all you guys came out to vote for marijuana and you passed it. I just... look how much power you got. I said, you know, we could just get you all out to vote every time. You know, you could change the state. You know, there's so many young people out there that if they really all came out to vote, they could almost just take the vote over. But
yeah, that's interesting.
Get them out to vote for something they want to come out and vote for.
Such a good point.
Such a good point, David.
Yeah.
And just by the way.
I'm an election judge, too. So when it comes to voting, I really get on my kids about not voting. You know, I want them to come out and vote, you know. Because it does make a difference. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, David, thank you. And in our second half today, we're going to talk about an issue, the cost of higher education, the amount of student loans that some kids are racking up these days, and my contention that one reason that's happening is because young folks don't vote, they don't engage, they're not talking to their representatives about this concern, and they're getting their behind swatted as a result for it. At least that's my view. Kiana from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning. You there, Kiana? Yeah, go ahead, Kiana. Good morning.
Okay, hello. I was calling to say good morning. My thing was that I feel that young voters, that when it comes to the ballot, sometimes the language that's put out there in the, you know, different type of subjects that are coming up for us to vote on. It's too confusing for me, even me as a young person. I'm about 29 years old, and it needs to be more written, I would say, like in layman terms, so that we can be able to better understand that. And also my other issue is that the connection of how the issues that are on the ballot connect with young individuals is like non-existent and unclear, so we tend not to go out and vote because we don't know how that really affects us.
Kiana, what about this idea of reading the newspaper? Is that in your world or not?
Somewhat. I usually read the newspaper only when it comes to like something like in social media or something out there that it interests me, but just picking up to look at what goes on locally, no. It's kind of like that's something that hasn't really been taught or ingrained in me, not even in high school or throughout college, so it's kind of like non-existent as well.
Well, as someone who still writes for the Kansas City Star, and I'm very proud to do so, let me just tell you, the whole idea of a newspaper is to lay out issues in layman's language, to use your term, Kiana, and that's what we try to do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I love the newspaper too, Steve. I write for one. But young people do get their information, and they get it from NPR is one of the places. And just recently on Terry Gross Fresh Air, they had the fellow that writes for The New Yorker talking about the Mideast. And he put it in such good language.
Yeah, right.
It was like a civics lesson. Dexter Filkins, I just remembered his name. But one of the things we talked about with the talking about this stuff in school that I think is fairly disturbing and different in the political climate is what do you see on political ads right now? And it's been true now for 15, 20 years. You see, if you disagree with me, you're a bad person.
Mm.
It's not that we disagree. I don't like your position. You're bad. You're dirty. And kids have picked this message up out of media, out of social media, out of the environment, out of the paper. They pick up this angriness. And
yeah.
I think that's squelching some of this debate in high school that we would like to see.
Katie Gio and Kenneth Palmer, where do you guys get your information about issues and politics and candidates, that kind of thing? Katie, let me start with you.
Yeah. Well, like Wes said, I get a lot of it from NPR, especially because while I'm driving, I can have it on. And so that's a really, really nice way to get news. And I would really like to be able to sit down with the New York Times or the Kansas City Star and read through it. But unfortunately, as a student and an employed student, I'm pretty sleep deprived as it is.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of time to spend an hour reading articles. So it's not the best solution, but I have several news apps on my phone that will send me notifications, and I can read them while I'm walking to class or while I'm waiting for a meeting to start.
Katie and I exchange AP news stories quite often.
Kenneth, how about you?
I'm kind of a news junkie, honestly, especially with the news apps. I primarily use NPR and Al Jazeera, and I also listen to NPR in my car. But I kind of make the time to read articles. I kind of use it as a procrastination tool for other homework. I feel like
that's
it's
in my book, Kenneth. It's in the book.
I mean, I feel like it's very accessible, though. Any knowledge you want to know about any issue is accessible, and it's pretty convenient. And I feel like that's something that may not be like just that fact in and of itself may not be as recognized as it should be among young people.
Kiana, thanks for the call. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here about why young people don't vote. We'll talk in our second half about the cost of higher education and the consequence that young folks might be paying by not pursuing that issue more vigorously in the halls of public opinion in this country. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This morning, we're talking about why young people don't vote. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, who's back with one of his occasional visits. It's always good to have him here. Kenneth Palmer is also here. He's a senior at Free State High School in Lawrence. Katie Gio, a former co-author of the column and a sophomore at Kenyon College in Ohio, is also joining us here today. Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Let's go to Mike from Shawnee. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. What a great issue. I'll try and make this as concise as I can.
Sure.
The reason politicians don't pay any attention to young people is because they don't vote. And they don't vote, in my opinion, because they're distracted by other things, by school, by jobs, by you know, the opposite sex, whatever. Politicians know that, and they can ignore their needs otherwise. The best example I can think of is 12 or 15 years ago, and I'm sure your guests know the date better than me, but Congress rolled over for the banks and made student loan debt non-dischargeable through bankruptcy.
Yeah.
A car loan is dischargeable. A credit card debt is dischargeable. A home mortgage is dischargeable, but not student loan.
And dischargeable, Mike, means what?
Bankruptcy.
In personal bankruptcy, that debt is forgiven.
Yeah, gotcha.
But not student loan debt, Steve. And and it's a travesty. The kids did not do – look, I'm almost 70. The kids did not do this to themselves. It was adults that pressured Congress to vote to treat student loan debt in this special way. I think it's disgraceful myself. But, you know, kids, they think they don't have a role, or they think politics doesn't affect them. Hey, just look at student debt.
Mike, I couldn't agree with you more. I really appreciate the phone call. Let me just tell you a quick story. A few years ago, a very prominent politician from Missouri was talking to a group of young people, and she began the conversation this way. She looked at them all, and they had been talking for a few minutes about some issues, and she looked at them all, and she said to them, "You know, guys, I got to tell you something. I really don't care what you think." And the room went absolutely quiet. And then she said, "And that's because you guys don't vote."
Yeah.
And, you know, that the message got through. And I get all the reasons. I understand the difficulty, the challenges of engaging at a young age. But, boy, the price young people are paying these days when it comes to the cost of higher education, loan terms, all that stuff to me is extraordinary. And I can't believe – I don't know what it's going to take. If that issue won't sort of arouse younger folks to engage and wake up and pay attention, then I don't know what will, because it's coming right out – of their own pocketbooks here. That's what we're talking about here. Let me go back to some phone calls here. And Audrey from Topeka. Audrey, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi. My comment has to do with, why did kids not pay attention, or did pay attention in the 60s and they don't now? And I think it's because there were two major events. One was the death of a president that every child clear down to the age of 6 or 7 knew about. And the other is the draft, because if you know that when you're 18 you have to go fight, you're going to be much more engaged in politics, I think.
And Audrey, I agree with that. Why doesn't the cost of higher education, an $80,000 debt looming over your head, why doesn't that rise to the level you're talking about here? Wes, why don't you chime in here, and then Audrey, I'll get a comment from you.
I think Audrey is on the money, and I would add a couple of other things. The death of Martin Luther King, the Civil Rights Movement, all of those things activated people. And the difference is the cost of student loans are deferred pain. When you get that money put in your account, you feel joy. And then when you have to make the payment every month years later, that's when you think, dang, I need to vote, except then it's too late. Huh. And that's the difference. When you're getting a draft card in the mail, just like Audrey is saying.
That's right now.
You're thinking, oh, wow, I'm 1A or whatever it is when you're going to go off. You're not 4F. And you're going to go fight for your country. So you run off in the Vietnam era and get into school or join the National Guard. You feel some immediate sense of worry. And we – too many of the issues, another one being, choice and life. People don't think about that one as a personal experience until they or a peer are really facing that question. And so they defer worry about it, or they defer worry about contraception costs or whatever till it hurts them. And then they think, I ought to maybe vote, or they don't realize the connection between that issue and voting.
Audrey, do you buy that?
Yes, I do. And I think one of the reasons for that is because children grow up seeing their parents defer things. They put everything on plastic. They make payments. You know, they wait and so on and so forth. And I think it's the culture in which we're raised right now.
Yeah,
a lot of evidence supports that.
Audrey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah. Adam tweeted us this at KCUR Up to Date. Why would younger voters vote when they've never seen a functional federal legislature? A lifetime of gridlock leaves a mark. Good point.
Who can argue? And I remember when my daughter, who was about 12 at the time, and I were in Washington, D.C., and they were at the edge of that fiscal cliff thing, and they were not voting, they weren't doing anything. And my inclination with Alyssa as we toured around Washington was to, like, apologize to every statue I could find. I'd see, like, Roosevelt, and I'd apologize to him, thinking, this is not functional. Mm-hmm. And if I am that distressed about it, with some history behind me, kids, I think, don't have that history, and they see it as just being non-existent. And especially in Kansas, there hasn't been a lot of close elections, so kids don't think about being part of an electorate.
Why don't young people vote? That's our topic today. What does it take to get a younger person out to the polls to cast a ballot during these this year's midterm elections? 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, I'm wondering, you know, Kenneth Palmer, Katie, you know, Gio, why aren't we seeing more younger folks talk about the cost of higher education as a motivating factor to get out to the polls? Katie, Gio, what are you seeing out there?
The cost of higher education is, you know, a primary concern for college students. Most of us are on financial aid, and even those who aren't, are their parents, and they themselves are paying a lot to come to Kenyon. And so it's not that we aren't interested in this issue, but I think we feel that we don't have much of a voice in politics. And part of that, like they've said, might be because we don't vote. But I think another reason is that we don't have money, and so we can't donate to campaigns. And we have seen over the last several years that money speaks volumes in elections. And so I think we feel a disconnect from politics, partly because we feel like we don't matter. Even if we do vote, what's making a politician follow our desires and wishes?
Okay. Kenneth, what are you seeing?
Well, I think a lot of the issue with education and, like, the funding of education really comes down to the fact that a lot of kids who are attending college have the expectation that their parents are going to either help them or entirely fund their education, even if that's a really unrealistic kind of understanding. It may be a delusion to some degree. I think there's a kind of a feeling that they're kind of a couple degrees away from this issue, really, that it's not going to directly affect them. It's not really on their shoulders. Whether or not that's true is debatable, but, you know, someone's paying for it, and they're not. I don't think they're considering the fact that this responsibility falls upon them. And at the same time, I think it does. We're talking about this deferred kind of pain. Is you really don't think of this as something that's looming right over your head. Even now, I'm applying to colleges now, and I have to really think about that. And I'm thinking about financial aid considerably, but it's also it's not as frightening to me as it probably should be, because it just seems so far away.
Yeah, I get that. Back to some phone calls here. Laura from Shawnee. Laura, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm an educator. I'm an elementary educator, so I can only speak from that standpoint. But I was just going to echo what some of your other callers said when they were hypothesizing that part of the problem is that we are not teaching civics as we did many years ago. And I want to echo that and say that is absolutely the case. And we just simply have eroded the time to be able to get to civics. And secondly, I think that in the last 8 to 10 years, the teaching profession has really been well, for all intents and purposes, sort of accosted. And so teachers are really hesitant to get children involved in, your guest was saying, he was able to debate really political, controversial subjects like abortion. Teachers now are in real fear for losing their jobs if they tried to bring up an issue that may not sit well with all of the students' parents. And so I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Laura, that's such a good point. I really appreciate you calling in and making it today. Just a great, great comment there.
I hear that a lot from teachers. I concur with her.
Krista from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Krista.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
This goes kind of with what she was just saying. I just believe that as a young person myself, I'm 23, and I just don't even know, you know, what are the basics of how I even start to vote? Where do I go? How do I register? And maybe I did learn all of that stuff in high school, But, you know, when you're in your teens, you kind of are just going through those motions in high school. Like, I didn't really care about that stuff then. And so now when it is really starting to matter and I am looking at school loans in the future, I don't know even where to start.
Huh. And I'm not getting after you, Krista, but you just uttered the sentence, now that I'm 23 and it matters. And I'm just going to say it mattered 5 years ago. And I am proud of you for saying, hey, I need to figure this out. But for the 18-year-olds, for the new voters like Kenneth, it matters today.
You know, Krista, just for the record, it's too late to vote in this midterm if you haven't registered yet. Which county do you live in?
I live in Jackson.
Okay. They just call the Jackson County Election Board, Election Office, and they can help get you squared away for the presidential election and in the intervening elections in between now and 2016.
Great. Thank you so much.
Good luck, Krista. I'm glad you called. Thank you.
That was a good call.
Florence from Kansas City, Missouri. Florence, welcome back to the show. Florence, good to have you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This question is for the students on the program today. I would like the students to answer the question, what do they think about the gridlock in between the two legislative parties in our legislative system?
Yeah. Katie, what do you think?
I mean, honestly, it's a joke. It's a circus act. I think it's quite pathetic and it's frustrating. And as a result, I think the pervading feeling among my generation, at least, and probably most other generations, is that this is ridiculous and it's not accomplishing anything. And that might be partially why we have so little faith in the ability of voting to change real issues.
It's turning kids off, you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, if you mention the legislature, you get snorts and laughter.
And Kenneth, you're nodding your head as Katie's talking.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely concur with that. I think that, you know, we see this happening at the biggest level, the level with the most authority. And I think it is, you know, it causes people to become disaffected. I mean, we already feel like we don't necessarily have the tools or the resources and the understanding to get involved in the political process directly. But seeing what the political process actually accomplishes, which is very little, really contributes. Like, even if we had the ability and the tools and the training to get involved very easily, it doesn't seem appealing. It seems politics has kind of become a dirty word. And I think that's kind of a pervading feeling. I don't think that's only among youth, but I do think it's particularly the case with people who have had that experience solely.
Yeah. Well,
and we pay all this money and set up all these programs to teach kids not to bully each other. And then all they have to do is turn on the TV and watch adults bully each other in the political sphere. And I think that turns off kids who were taught not to bully.
Alan from Kansas City, Missouri. Alan, good morning.
Yes, good morning. You and the panelists have pretty much restricted your discussion to young people who are going off to college or are in college, but many young people don't. And surely they're less concerned with student loans than with things like apprenticeships, minimum wage, all the bread and butter issues that politicians often also seem to neglect.
Yeah, that's a very fine point. And if you think that politicians aren't listening to the young people coming from a more affluent side of the socioeconomic bracket, they sure aren't listening to the ones who are coming from the less affluent sides. Your point is well taken, and those young people are concerned about making a living wage in jobs. You see more and more of this as food service workers are organizing and trying to make changes in that arena. And I think it goes right back to being able to educate even most assuredly the non-college bound on how important this is to their actual real life. And you made some good examples.
Kenneth?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think generally in terms of getting people trained, be it to get a college education or to go have some kind of vocational school and to have some kind of opportunity. I mean, it's really important to have that for people to feel like they have a stake in society. If they feel like they have opportunities for the future and they have a secure position, I think they feel more willing to get involved actively in this system that they feel like is functional and at least at a basic level functional and beneficial to them.
Well, very well said. I agree with you, Kenneth.
Neil from Midtown. Neil, you're on Up to Date. We're talking today about why young people don't vote. Good morning.
Hi, yeah. Love the show. I'm calling in because, You know, I vote, but a lot of times I leave different marks on the ballot blank because I feel like there isn't an option, a person who really represents me for that position. You know, I tend to be on the far left, and, you know, at least here in Missouri, the options I'm getting are moderate, left, center, and, you know, the right. And there's just not someone out there always to represent my politics.
Okay, I understand the frustration. And what can you do about that? What needs to happen, do you think?
I mean, I could go somewhere else, you know. It's always that.
We like you. Don't go too far. So.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, more people, there needs to be more variety in the people running. You know, a breakup of the two-party kind of gridlock would really help.
Right.
You know, third-party candidates generally don't stand much of a chance, you know, that's a real shame, you know. And when I listen to European politics and I hear them having to make coalition governments and having to cut deals between parties, I wonder if our country would be better served by a broader spectrum of smaller parties.
But the reality is, and for the young people listening, the reality is that for the current reality, a certain block of loud people, and this is true throughout history, it's true again, a certain block of loud people are out being very, very active in organizations that are meaningful to them and swaying the body politic right now. Mm-hmm. And if you were to magically get all the young people between 18 and 30 to get up and follow what their beliefs are and to see how the political process worked, a bunch of those things you are legitimately frustrated in would probably change. That's my message.
Well, it'll be interesting, too, to see what happens in Kansas this year. You know, if, and that's a big – I'm underlining that word three times – if independent candidate Greg Orman wins the Senate race, the impact that that might have across the country in terms of encouraging more independent candidacies, to get to Neil's point here, to offer voters more of a choice. We'll see what happens here. Yeah. Let's go to Alfredo from Grandview. Good morning.
Morning. How are you guys?
Well, thanks.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I was listening to your show, and it's just more of a rant. We as young people, I'm 21, mm-hmm. just 21, and we need to step it up. You know, there's so many things that are going on in our lives, and the future, we're the key to that future. You know, how many disasters, how many, you know, shootings is it going to take for us to get our heads out of our, you know, rear sides and get our things together. So definitely the first step to that is go out and vote. That's the best way we can make a change or start to make a change.
Good comments, Alfredo. Thank you very much.
If I could reach through the wire, I would shake his hand. Yeah. Well said.
Okay. Let me go back to Charles here from Lenexa. Charles, good morning.
Yes, sir. I was just calling in. As a younger individual and actually a voter, I feel that I'm somewhat deterred from voting due to the fact that I think that no matter who I vote in and what they stand for, there's such large and influential lobbying and organizations that will have their way just due to the fact that they have the money. And we have the vote, but the money will trump, in my opinion, in the end. And I think that can be seen time and time again. And I know that, you know, as a voter, we have the power. We have the power to vote. You know, you can change a legislature two ways, revolution or voting. And if we could vote in who we want and we could get rid of lobbying, but it just takes individuals voting.
Yeah.
And it's just sad that to see that the effect of lobbying, and I feel that really deters me and some of the people I've talked to.
I'm just going to say AARP. Yeah. Think about those folks and how much influence they have. We need a young folks version.
I want to thank our guest today. What a good conversation. Katie Gio, a sophomore at Kenyon College in Ohio. Kenneth Palmer, a senior at Free State High School in Lawrence. Thank you both for coming on today. We sure appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you.
Dr. Wes Crenshaw, always good to have you too. Thanks.
Good to be here.
Good to have you.